Welcome to LifeRx Podcast, a show about living consciously in all aspects of your life with authenticity and integrity. I'm Eva Patel. Welcome again to the LifeRx Podcast Show. Hope you all had a wonderful week. And today's show is about overcoming fear and anxiety. It's funny how recently I've met a lot of people and everybody's got some form of fear or anxiety going on in their life, whether it's through drama in their life or crisis or whether it's just small little things or just what's happening in the world. But it seems to be very prevalent right now. So today's special guest is Dr. Sage Breslin. She's a licensed psychologist and an intuitive consultant who specializes in personal transformation. She's written numerous books and chapters and continuing education courses that promotes the transition from trauma to personal empowerment. She has trained in this practice of ancient ritual in healing in the US, Mexico, and Asia. And she currently practices in Solano Beach, California. So after the short break, I'll get started with the interview with Sage.
Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. I'm delighted.
And I have to say, today is a wonderful topic of overcoming fear and anxiety. And since there's so much of it out there, I just felt this was a wonderful one that you could help us with. So, Sage, why do people have fear?
Well, you know, I think fear is really just a mental game when it comes down to it. It's very cognitive. The reality is that fear is just a warning signal, kind of like your smoke alarm going off in your bedroom if there is a fire in the house. It alerts you that you need to change your behavior. You need to wake up, you need to get dressed, you need to get out. You basically need to act to ensure your safety. But the myth comes from the perception of fear. It's assuming that fear is an appropriate feeling even though there's no real danger. So that's the difference between real fear or real danger, and perceived fear from perceived danger. So people have fear when they are experiencing an uncomfortable feeling more often than because they're in the presence of real danger. We often tell ourselves that we're afraid in the absence of danger when really we're just uncomfortable or disturbed or overwhelmed. Basically, use a word that doesn't support a fearless lifestyle.
Okay. And so what is anxiety?
Well, you know, funny enough, anxiety and excitement run along the same continuum. And I think anxiety is an emotion that's often mistaken. If you think about the biochemical components of anxiety and excitement, they're really, really similar. Think about just the physical experience of those two feelings without any accompanying thought. How do they differ? You don't, probably. I mean, most of us would say, you know, we get kind of a funny feeling racing up and down our middle, or we might get butterflies, or we might have our heart race a little bit. And in all honesty, we could interpret that as excitement, or we could interpret it more negatively as anxiety. It's the thoughts that are actually associated with that physical feeling that result in our feeling uncomfortable rather than just curious, for instance. So when the thoughts become habits over time, we begin to incorporate anxiety as we do so.
So how does one overcome something that they're so fearful of? Like if there's something that like they're dreading or they're like really anxious about, how do you overcome that?
You know, there are a lot of different interventions that are out there for managing our fears or phobias. Some of the ones I can describe are what I'd call clinical interventions, but there are also things that people can do at home to conquer their fears. There are kind of two categories of interventions. There are exercises or techniques that present you with a fear and demand a new response. Or there are techniques or interventions that repeatedly pair something called the relaxation response with images or ideas that have been increasingly anxiety provoking. So the first set is something called flooding exercises, and prolonged exposure therapy would be one example of flooding exercises. The other set are what we call systematic desensitization strategies. If we go into layman's terms, if you think about, let's say you're afraid of heights, one of the things you could do is you could simply choose to take an elevator up to the top of the Empire State Building and step out. And although you might feel sick to your stomach, you might feel like you're going to faint, you'll actually have accomplished the end to your fear because you will have done it. You will have been successful.
Yeah.
And that is how people conquer flooding. Other people go and decide to bungee jump. You know, once you're off, it's done. And then it's just a matter of retraining your brain to understand you've had success. You know, there is no danger. You've lived through the danger. There is no more data indicating that this is a real fear. This was just perceived fear. The systematic desensitization strategies, in layman's terms, are ways that we learn to relax in the presence of things that are associated with those fears or anxieties. For instance, let's say you're afraid of snakes.
Yeah.
You would
catch all the ones that I am.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I can handle most snakes, but you know, then there are times where I really would prefer not to be in that situation. But a lot of people out there.
Okay. All right. So how do I overcome this?
So if you want to think about using something like systematic desensitization, I mean, the first thing is you could do flooding and you could simply have somebody come in and bring a snake out of a box and hand it to you. And you would then, in fact, be successful. You might not like it. You might be uncomfortable, but you will have done it. So your brain will then have data that, well, you're not really afraid because it already happened. You already had success.
Okay.
That isn't a very pleasant idea for many people.
I could handle that.
Well, you probably could handle it, but it doesn't sound good, does it? It sounds very uncomfortable.
No.
So the other routine that we often do and that therapists offer is the systematic desensitization. And what that involves is you would sit down and you would write a list, a hierarchy, per se, of the most anxiety-provoking thing you could think of about a snake, and then a little bit less anxiety-provoking, and a little bit less, and a little bit less, until you get down to the bottom thought, which is maybe having a conversation with somebody who saw a picture of a snake in a magazine, or something like that. And we would teach you to invoke your relaxation response, become relaxed in response to either hypnosis or guided imagery or meditation or deep breathing that would allow you to create relaxation even though you're having this image of this person who's telling you the story of the snake that they saw in the magazine. And once you learn to become relaxed and stay relaxed with that image, you would then move on to the next image that was slightly more anxiety-provoking. Maybe they tell you a story about actually handling a snake. And then maybe after you've learned how to become relaxed with that, maybe the next thing is you watch a video of a snake out in the wild and you learn how to relax with that. And maybe the next video is you watch a video of somebody handling a snake and you learn to relax in response to that. And so on and so forth until you're ready for what we call in vivo, which is where you handle a snake if that's what you're frightened of doing. And you do that with somebody who's skilled at handling snakes and, you know, able to do so and able to manage or control the snake as well. And you learn to do your relaxation strategy in those circumstances so that you completely conquer the fear or the phobia.
So now how does this, okay, that's for an object or an animal or something you're scared of. So how does fear, like, you know, fear of what's happening in the world today or fear of the future or the finances or what's going to happen to the financial future of America, I mean, those types of fears that are very common today, you know, how do people overcome anxiety and fear associated with their life?
Well, it's interesting. I think that when we develop fears of the unknown, they're more amorphous. They're not specific to how do I deal with tomorrow or how am I dealing with, you know, the spider that's crawling across my floor. When they are really much more global or more amorphous, where they don't have a specific feeling or set of boundaries to them, then I think we really have to ask ourselves, are we staying present? And when we move out of the present, we don't tend to function as well. So if we can stay oriented to the present, to the here and to the now, we live more fully and we don't lose ourselves by projecting what our experience may be in the future. Most of us don't know what's going to happen a year from now or 2 years from now or 5 years or 10 years or 100 years from now. Most of us just really don't have that information. And we could certainly pour our energy into knowing it or worrying about it, but that probably would remove us from living in the present. We'd miss a lot.
Yeah. So when we're past and future tripping, we forget, right, to be in the present.
Exactly.
Moment.
Exactly. So my first step with people is really always to try to teach them how to live a more present lifestyle and to see what kind of impact that has first. If that is, if they're able to rein it in and become more specific, I am afraid that the radiation from the nuclear plant in Japan is going to reach me and create symptoms. When it becomes more specific in that way, I really ask them, okay, that's reasonable to have a concern. So now let's try to validate your concern. And I ask them to do research. Really, fear is only going to be supported in the body if there is evidence for danger. And you might have to really sift through some research to determine whether or not there's evidence for danger, especially with the example that I just gave you, because there are a lot of people producing a lot of data that may or may not be accurate with regards to that. So I really try to keep it very cognitively clear when it comes to those kinds of ideas.
And I find that, you know, with media, there's a lot of fear that's repeated again and again, and so I guess it becomes a part of us. Do we kind of energetically take that on? Is that what it is?
I think that fear and supporting fear in your being is a habit. We all develop these habits and patterns. And I love the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. I love the simplicity of these instructions for life. And one of the first four agreements, is to be impeccable with your word. And I always tell people, it's not so much your word to other people. Certainly I want people to be honest and sincere, but I am much more interested in people being impeccable with their words themselves. And really, that is how you speak to yourself. And if you say, I'm afraid he's going to leave me, or I'm afraid I won't be able to make the rent, you're really being inauthentic. Those things aren't really accurate. Because if you're in a relationship and a spouse or a mate decides to end the relationship or to leave, that's not a dangerous situation. It's a highly uncomfortable, emotionally painful situation. There's really no danger there. So that idea that you would say, I'm afraid, it really can't be supported. The data doesn't support that. Being able to look at, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to make the rent. Okay, well, that's not particularly dangerous. What that is a concern, and there's a real easy resolution to that concern. You need to generate income. Okay, now let's get creative. How can you generate income? So there are ways to break up these habits or these patterns, and a lot of it is about breaking up the thought patterns. breaking up the habits that we have of misspeaking to ourselves.
Yeah, that's very important, to take steps to be able to control these fears, and knowing where you can start and what you can do is very important. And do you feel that fear stops people from obtaining, like, their goals and their dreams, because it's kind of like a doorstop that comes along and just kind of becomes a bolster in front of them?
I think it can. I think it can. You know, it's interesting that at the foundation of true fear is that fight or flight response. And when we have real fear from real danger, we get this incredible rush of adrenaline. And when we get the flight response, we cut and run, right? Our body fills up with enough adrenaline that we just dash out of a dangerous situation. The fight response is a really interesting response because it still fills us with adrenaline, but we have to still ourselves at the same time. We have to be able to stand up and use the adrenaline in a singular position. We don't get to run it off. We get to enact, and it might be to physically defend ourselves. It might be even to emotionally defend ourselves. But when some people are faced with fearsome situations, even if they're emotionally fearsome, they become immobilized. And there are lots of people who report waking up in the middle of the night in response to an odd sound in their house and feeling as if they cannot move from the bed, that they absolutely feel that they're immobilized. And their thoughts actually lead them to believe that they can't do anything. And it's the thoughts that get repeated over time that result in the inability to move forward, and sometimes move forward with anything. Sometimes when that immobilization thought takes hold, it is repeated like a mantra inside the head until you're really not making any decisions. You're not making any forward movement. I was going to say the other thing about fear getting in the way of, you know, attaining your goals or achieving dreams or goals is that fear supports what we call the I am not. And it really is I am not dot, dot, dot. I am not good enough. I'm not whole enough. I'm not perfect enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not educated enough, whatever it is. And so true manifesting really requires us to be at one with the source. We really have to embody the I am. And, you know, that to me is way more important, is learning to embody and live the I am, because that supports the power within you. And that helps you move forward no matter what the obstacles are that present. If you're in the I am not, you're immobilized. And that, you know, there's really there is no I am not in manifesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So how does one become aware of any hidden fears that they may have and find solutions to overcome them?
Well, that's a great question. I think a lot of people know what their fears are. Some people just are will call themselves fearful, and they don't know where it started. And they don't know where it ends. There's not a big boundary around it, and it doesn't seem to be associated with anything specific. And I think actually that psychotherapy and intuitive consultation and meditation are all useful ways to better identify what the source of the fear has been, at least historically, so that it's easier to wrap your arms around that, right? Easier to wrap your head around that.
So, Sage, I know that you've led many retreats in transformational and personal empowerment. Could you share with our listeners a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, for the last 5 years, I've been leading transformational journeys, both here in the U.S. as well as in Mexico. And we travel to areas where the energy supports our goals of release, transformation, renewal, and evolution. So we like to go to areas that have their own special energy that support the kind of emotional transformative work that we do there.
So could you share a little bit more about what type of processes you go through and how one could benefit from attending these workshops?
Sure. I actually have come to believe that the retreat setting is probably the best way to really achieve change, because our total focus for the 4 to 6 days that we're working is on the process. Don't have to pack up your stuff and go back to work, go home, or take care of kids after 45 minutes. You can you can really delve deep and you can stay open until you've done some real work. And the problem with a general therapy hour or a clinical hour is it's 45 minutes. I mean, you've got life to deal with. And so the retreat setting offers a really different approach. We work typically 6 to 8 hours at a time. And we then, you know, we're in a very nurturant, safe, secure setting so that people can remain open. They can continue their work in their dream state. They wake up and they go at it again the next day. And so we just tend to go deeper and deeper and deeper through the process rather than going down, capturing a little material and running away.
So rather than doing a little chisel, chisel, you actually move the mountain.
Exactly. So really anyone who's experiencing challenges in his or her life, anyone who feels stuck, anyone who has a history of trauma, really anyone who just wants to shift to a new way of doing things can benefit from this work.
And so in these journeys that you do, what do your students kind of experience and, you know, how is it that these journeys have really helped them?
Mm-hmm. Well, I notice a couple of things. Number one, we don't just, people say, oh, I know, it's just the woo-woo people who go. You know, it's just you intuitive people that go on.
Exactly. They like to call us woo-woo, right?
And you know what's funny is I have consistently had mathematicians, historians, I've had lots of engineers, teachers. It's not just the woo-woo people. It's not just other energy workers who decide to come on these journeys. I mean, really, in all honesty, we get a wide variety of people who work with us. And the kind of feedback that we get, and we tend to get a lot of feedback within the weeks after the journey, but also on our last night, we process what we've discovered and what we've experienced. And what I hear consistently on that last night is the shift not only in how the person thinks about the world, but also how they think about themselves and how they perceive things. So, you know, we see a real opening of all the senses. We see a real depth in intimacy between people, and not just sexual intimacy. That's what, you know, we don't generally see that, unless it's a couple that's come together. It's in the emotional intimacy that they experience by being in contact with others who are having similar experiences and similar transformation.
When you're in a group, it's a different vibration, and you do feel it more, or you get deeper or something. Yeah, I do believe that.
Well, there's a really interesting phenomena that happens in group, and that is that in the group setting, we get vicarious learning. So not only do you have your experience, but you can learn and transform through experiencing with someone else. So you observe someone else doing their work, and suddenly you're lifted to a new level. So that's definitely one of the benefits of being in a group setting. We have a lot of people who say, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm pretty singular and more solitary. I like to work just one-on-one. And they are amazed at how much they like the group process once they get going. And,
you
know, people come and they don't know one another at all when they get there oftentimes, and they leave lifetime friends.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's imagine the friendships you can make. I know that you do a course in Teo. Could you elaborate a little bit on what that's all about?
Sure. Teotihuacan is a small village about 35 kilometers from Mexico City, and it's home to the pyramids there. And it's actually known as the place where man becomes God, which is an interesting phenomenon. But the pyramids there are actually designed in a structure. The whole layout of the pyramids there serve as a map to transformation and evolution. And again, that's a funny idea, that how could someplace that's 4,000 years old be a blueprint for this kind of work? And yet it is. We move through each of the stations of the pyramids doing different kinds of activities and rituals that allow us not only to identify the obstacles that we've been facing or that have been inhibiting us from further growth. Then we release them and everything that's attached to them, our physical impressions, our emotional experiences, our cognitions about them, our thoughts about them, and even the way we've been attached to the spirit world or our ideas about spirituality get left behind so that we can then develop a renewed connection to spirit that works better for us. And people tend to then recharge and are capable of transformation that they never knew they could be capable of before. We're actually heading back to Teo on June 24th, I think, Friday, June 24th.
Of this year. Okay. And then I know you have a wonderful new retreat coming up at the end of April this month about restoring the core, and I'm sure that many of our listeners will want to know about that because it's a little bit more local.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting. We were titling this and playing around with a title that, how can we help people understand what it is that we're going to be doing while we're there, and we titled it Fissures and Fusions, Restoring the Core, and my husband said to me, Fissures and Fusions, are we doing physics here? Are we mending hearts? What are we doing? And I said, oftentimes we describe ourselves as broken. If we say, I have a broken heart. And I said, we're not broken. Most of us just have these sort of cracks and fragments that we need to collect up and be able to put back together in order to operate better.
And become whole.
And become whole again. So one of the interesting pieces is that as much as the energy in Teotihuacan emphasizes foundation and the root chakra, the energy all along the Mendocino Coast emphasizes the core and the heart chakra. So we'll be journeying in the village of Elk, which is about 3 hours north of San Francisco and about 10 miles south of the village of Mendocino. And the Pomo Indians there consider this area to be sacred, and they utilize the waters in that area in all of their healing rituals. And Elk happens to be one of the only areas where a river comes down from the mountain and pours into the sea, making it a very sacred, special place to do this kind of work. So we're going to be focusing on the resolution of very deep issues that have left us fragmented and feeling like we can't be complete or whole. And when we've identified those lost bits and pieces, then we'll go ahead and incorporate those energies back into the heart space and use the local energy of Elk to restore and reinvigorate the core.
Wow, that sounds great. So where do people get info to sign up for this? Because I know that it's very close and there's limited spaces, so where would they go to find this information?
They can go to my website, which is www.healingheartcenter.org, and there is something called a Journeys tab, and they can actually click on the Journeys tab, and you can find information about the Elk trip as well as the Teotihuacan trip there. There are flyers that can be downloaded, but we also have a shop, an electronic shop on the website where you can simply select the journey, put it in your shopping cart, and pay for it through PayPal. We try to make it as easy.
Don't we just love modern technology of how things can be done?
I know, it's lovely.
I just love it. So before we come to the end of the show, what's the number one thing that you would say somebody could take right now to control any fear or anxiety they may be having due to, their lifestyle, whether it's relationship, whether it's finances, whether it's just what's happening in the world? What do you think that there's something that they could do?
Well, I love the Latin here, so I'll just go for it. Carpe diem. It means seize this day. Live today differently. Go out and do one thing that's uncomfortable, and the success you experience today will carry you through tomorrow. And success tomorrow will carry you through to the next.
So is it just doing something that's different or something that's a little bit daring than what you normally would do?
Well, oftentimes different is what we experience as uncomfortable.
Right.
If you are finding that you're keeping yourself in the box, just do anything outside the box and find out that you can. Finding out that you can means that you've succeeded. Then do something else outside the box.
And stay in the present moment.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Sage. That was wonderful. I'm sure everybody really appreciated it. And thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Eva. It was great to be with you today.
Thank you so much, Sage. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it for another show, everyone. I hope you really enjoyed the show. And I'd really like to thank my guest, Dr. Sage Breslin, for being here. And thank you so much for giving us all your wisdom on fear and anxiety. I'm sure most of us will be able to put some of that to use. And don't forget, you can give us a ring or email at liferxpodcast@gmail.com and give us a call at 415-322-8777. So we'd love to have your feedback and share your emails. And don't forget, it's spring, so start planting in your gardens and seeing what you sow is what you reap. Thanks again, and stay tuned for the next show, because we'll have even more for you next week. And don't forget to give us a review on iTunes, and have a wonderful week. Bye. Namaste.